You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
Brent crude topped $100, and if you recall our headline from just July 9th, you said, $120 oil, that's pretty easy to hit. Looks like they're just following your forecast, Mark.
Well, I know we'll make the 120 now. We got pretty close, and the chart said, and the cycle said, we could go up, and everybody was looking, we did get down to the high 60s after the big top, and so you can say it dropped 50%, which in technical analysis is sort of a, benchmark number, correct halfway, that sort of creates a technical support level. So it sure looked like, when we got down to the 60s, you were going to at least get a technical bounce. But the cycle work said we're not done to the upside, and we may not be done for a while, though I think, maybe next year or so it could all be over. Maybe we could come down and stay down for a while. But we're just trying to take it a day at a time. And as you remember, I was really more, and I'm still in, many of the oil stocks. Without mentioning the names, we have mentioned them in the past, but I prefer people to subscribe to VR Trader, which they can by going to VRTrader.com and sign up. But, we did mention oil stocks because of the dividends and so forth as a good play, whether you want to actually be in the oil, crude oil futures or the ETFs for crude oil themselves. So, we're patting ourselves on the back, but, that's what the work said. And, we just have to decide at what point here do we take a profit and try to, trade this market and, whether we need to do, we haven't made that decision yet, so we'll take a look at it. But, the whole situation in Iran, we're dealing with a very, clever and cynical, and powerful group there, which had prepared for decades for is all happening, loading up on missiles and, being supported, I guess, indirectly or directly by Russia and China. And they're just hell-bent on destroying both Israel and the United States. And they're just, ideological criminals is the best way to describe it. I know a lot of, as I mentioned off-air, a lot of Iranians that emigrated from Iran. When the Shah got deposed, many in California, and you told me there's a bunch in North Vancouver, and you sit down with many of them. Some are Jewish, by the way, and since I'm Jewish, I met a lot of them at temples and stuff in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills and so forth. They're very successful people. I mean, the whole group of them, whether you like the ones in Iran that are still there or only the ones that emigrated, but they're very smart. They're aggressive, smart people, and they deserve the best. So hopefully that gets turned around, and we can all blame Jimmy Carter, way back there in the 1970s for allowing the Shah to be deposed and his stupidity. I guess it's Democrat stupidity about the global economy and opening everything up and everybody having their own way in their own country, regardless of whether it would say the best for the world or not. So anyway, now we're trying to undo that mistake. But getting back to your crude oil comment, yep, that's where we are, and we'll just continue to monitor it. And I encourage people to subscribe to our letter if they want more information.
Saudi Arabia, of course, awash in oil, but they want atomic power for electricity. Will they get it?
Apparently, there was a news story today, unless I'm a day off on the news, that apparently they're negotiating a deal with the Saudi prince, President Trump and he, about allowing them to gain access to, nuclear power to the extent that they don't turn it into nuclear weapons. The thought being to try to get Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords, which was a big success for Donald Trump in his first administration. And that would be a big coup. And as we discussed off air, you know, once the Saudis, assuming they do get nuclear reactors and stuff, regardless of the restrictions put on them, things could change. And if there's a change in power there, control, as you indicated, that perhaps, you know, they can end up obtaining a nuclear weapon down the road at some point. So there's always that risk. There's an interesting story about them, but as you also mentioned to me, Canada providing nuclear reactors to Pakistan and India, and they ended up turning them into opportunities to create nuclear weapons. So you can't trust anybody with that kind of power, I guess, is the bottom line lesson, right?
Well, you have to guarantee inspections. And, of course, there's no guarantee people will allow that.
I wonder if that's part of the Saudi-Trump deal that's now being negotiated. Should be interesting.
Sure. Course, I mean, there's no doubt the Saudi royal family, you know, could be trusted, I guess, with their word. But regime change can happen. It happened to the Shah of Iran.
Right, right. So that's the story there, and we'll just see if that all plays out. And we have, you know, the markets as a whole. You know, people who subscribe to my annual forecast models know that, and it's still available if you go to VRTrader.com. It showed a nice sharp sell-off in July, and so what's happened here, you know, the last couple few days in July is not of any great surprise to us. We were in this 30-day astrocyclical period called Mercury retrograde, which began the beginning of July and just ended today. And people can scoff at it, but there's a cycle you can study. It's not any original work on our part. It goes back thousands of years. But apparently during this period, you get a lot of volatility in all markets, and sometimes even in personal activity and business and conduct. It's just a cycle that imposes itself on human beings or on the planet. In any event, the last 30 days has been choppy. Many of the high-tech stocks, you know, the chip stocks, the high flyers, the hyperscalers, as they call them, have experienced sharp corrections. There's been a lot of, you know, volatility here. And a lot of surprises in both directions day to day. So we just come out of that period today. Doesn't mean it's going to just end tomorrow to the clock, but we're just coming out of that. So maybe we'll see a little more stabilization in August. But, you know, we do have those midterm elections coming up, and who knows how the market's going to interpret that. You know, if the Republicans lose the House, you know, sometimes the markets like the fact that Congress is balanced, so to speak. It's not all one-sided, or it gets to the point of inability to conduct any business. And history sort of says markets like that when Congress can't create or uncreate issues. So nothing goes anywhere in it, and there's a stalemate-type situation. So the markets sort of like that, understandably so, because government is usually a problem in terms of business and in terms of what it does. But on the other hand, there are some legislation pieces out there, which, you know, I'm going to talk about now, which, you know, are important to business, in particular both in the crypto area and the cannabis area. But for the most part, stalemate in Congress is probably going to be appreciated by markets. So we'll see how that all that plays out, you know, come November. But in the meantime, you know, we do have that Clarity Act, which is it's probably the most significant phase that it's in right now. The House of Representatives approved its version. And, the, you know, the Clarity Act basically creates, you know, stabilization for the market. So we're going to go through all the details here because it's really interesting stuff. So there's some current negotiations underway. There are basically five issues that are sort of on the table here. There's ethics provisions, which they say is the largest political obstacle. The Democrats were demanding stronger restrictions. You know, we just know from recent days or weeks, we found out how Donald Trump and his family have benefited significantly financially from the crypto market. Now, I personally have no problem with that because I know with Biden and on many, I'm sure with other presidents, there have been, you know, personal gains, financial gains. I'm sure we haven't heard about all of them, so this is no great surprise, but I have no problem with them benefiting. But in any event, the Democrats are demanding some stronger restrictions there, and we'll see, you know, there's some loopholes. You have to negotiate that. There's also concern over whether the Clarity Act has SEC or CFTC jurisdiction, the Securities Exchange Commission or the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. So which agency is going to oversee all this? There's what's known as DeFi protections. They want to make sure developers are of non-custodial software and decentralized finance protocols can reserve additional legal protections, and this is a resolved technical issue. Anti-money laundering discussions, know your customers. Some of the Democrats are pressing for stronger anti-money laundering there. I should point out that not all the Democrats are against the issue, though the Republicans apparently brought the Clarity Act into the legislative fold here in the last couple of years. There are several that do support it, and there are many Democrats that are involved in crypto. Some of the biggest companies on the planet, particularly in the hyperscaling and all the power generation businesses and the Mag 7, many of the owners and controllers of this company were Democrats. So it's not even an issue there. You know, I guess you follow the money, right? So there's also, you know, coordination with the stable coins. If you remember last year, the Genius Act was already passed and is in law, and they needed to get this Clarity Act to define market structure framework for it, and that's really been the holdup. In our discussions last year, I sort of foresaw that it would take through 2026 before we got all this legislation through, and so far I was correct in that assumption. Now, it still hasn't happened yet, and I think Congress disappears in August for a while, so they only have a limited window to do this. So the outlook is sort of uncertain here. The Republicans are feeling supportive of the Clarity Act, and there's so many of the key altcoins, things like XRP and Solana and a lot of the other XLM, or many of the other cryptos that are used in commerce, that they really are expanding their influence in a big way. If you really do some research on the internet, you can see they're already being heavily used around the world. So this is not something new and generating a lot of cost savings for financial institutions. So it's already underway. And even if they don't pass the Clarity Act now, that they're going to continue to do what they're doing, and it eventually will get passed at some point. But we'll see how it, if it does get through. And if it does, I think the next 1 or 2 weeks is really decisive here, to see whether the Senate leadership can really get it through. So what does it really all provide? Well, it creates the first comprehensive federal regulatory framework for digital assets. It clarifies which assets are securities, as I just mentioned. Either way, is it an SEC or CFTC venue? It provides a pathway for decentralized blockchain projects to transition away from SEC regulation once they become sufficiently decentralized. As you may know, I do produce the blockchain letter, so I'm happy to hear that. It establishes a clear registration disclosure requirements and reduces regulatory uncertainty. So it would help Ethereum, XRP, companies like Coinbase, which, as you know, is the big public company that trades the crypto Robinhood, a company called Circle, which went public, as you remember, last year. Many of the crypto miners, blockchain infrastructure companies, and the broader digital industry. And indirectly, I guess, Bitcoin, too, though this is not really to the benefit of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is sort of its own little world. It doesn't really offer the business connections in terms of transmitting and creating commerce and implementing commerce the way many of these other cryptos or altcoins, as they call them, do. So, and Bitcoin is sort of its own little world here, but we can talk about that in a moment separately. But so there's about a 60% chance this thing gets passed. We'll see what happens. So I just want to touch base on that because it's day-to-day here, minute-to-minute. I do the blockchain letter, and I think a lot to the benefit, potential benefit of the economy, both in the U.S. and around the world, that really is based on whether we get this legislation through. But, you know, it's like the train has left the station. In other words, there's nothing going to stop the crypto market from expanding. It's the fear or resentment of government influence, and the whole idea was because of our fear of the way the governments around the world manage money and can potentially control your assets, the entire crypto market sort of came into being, and I guess you can give Bitcoin the credit for that. I mean, you hear stories like in Europe now, you know, where, you know, the governments are in trouble financially. And many analysts are saying, well, they want war in Europe because that's the only way they can pull themselves out of debt. But, you know, people want to start moving assets out of Europe, for example. And, you know, the governments can put restrictions on that where you can't move your money out. And many people who own gold and silver, I mean, there's precedent in the past where I think some of it's happening now already where they don't allow you to move your physical metals or transfer your assets. And governments can restrict your financial, you know, freedom. So the crypto market sort of came into being because of that potential risk. And, you know, Bitcoin, you know, right, even though it's limited in its ability to do all the things that some of these other altcoins do, like XRP and so forth, I mean, you could be anywhere in the world and transact in Bitcoin on your phone, on your iPhone, or on, you know, your laptop or wherever computer you're using. You don't need a bank, you don't need the government approval, you don't need anything. And it's amazing when you think in terms of the financial markets and freedom that open up because of that. So that's the reason why we even discuss this thing. I mean, it's not just a matter of making money, it's implementing transactions, providing economic freedom and protection for people around the world. So the continued progress in the crypto world, in the crypto world of assets, will continue regardless of whether this law passes now or not. I mean, look at all the things that happened in Bitcoin since it came into being in the last 15, 16 years, company accepting it for transactions, people were originally skeptical about the whole thing, and it did become a viable means of transaction, though it's not the best, and obviously it's had some tremendous volatility, but still, that said, the U.S. government, I think, controls, I think $50 billion of Bitcoin and so forth. I mean, there's still plenty of vested interest in keeping the vehicle alive, so we'll see how that all plays out. And moving on, Jim, you know, we still have some cannabis stuff pending out there. There's still the federal rescheduling coming out. There's actually an interesting story I picked up in the news today where some of the Democratic members of the Senate and or the House are actually looking to propose a even more liberal revision of the rescheduling, you know, effect saying, well, let's not just talk about rescheduling from Schedule 1 down to 3, let's deschedule it completely. Let's get it off all schedules. And that would even free it up even more. So there's even a more liberal viewpoint out there, which, frankly, I'm for. I mean, you know, this is like, you know, prohibition with alcohol back in the 1920s. You know what I mean? This is, you know, you're not going to stop people from using it. And meanwhile, there's been benefits to the cannabis, and opening it up opens up research now, which can document many of the anecdotal benefits that we've heard and read about over the years. So the freer it is, the better. So I'm even more supportive if they completely unschedule it and take it off the list, and there's no restrictions whatsoever. I mean, you know, it could be as unrestricted as using honey or sugar or anything else that you want to use, you know, and no government interference whatsoever. So that's sort of still pending now. Are they going to take the first step and get it back to, you know, from down to the Schedule 3 from the 1? And like I say, it'd be better if that didn't even happen at all. And we're just sort of waiting for that ever since Donald Trump came out with that executive order to get it done. It just hasn't happened. And it seems like the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, is like stumbling over themselves and just trying to get it done. So that's a big plus.
Well, it's been legal in Canada for about 10 years and no chaos and mayhem in the streets. And police officers I've talked to, I said, when have you ever had like a violent incident fueled by marijuana? And they're going, never. It makes people mellow and happy.
It needs to be federally legalized here in the United States, but there's so many political, you know, opponents to it, cross currents. And part of the reason is that here in the U.S., you've got states' rights. Each of the states have, you know, under the U.S. Constitution, states have rights to do certain things, and one state would disagree with another. And there's some states that, you know, have legalized marijuana and cannabis, and others haven't. And even the ones that have, there's certain regulations, and the fact that it's really a hodgepodge of regulations and controls all over the place, with 50 states going in 50, potentially 50 different directions, and it really needs to be unified. But the question is whether they will all agree to a federal elimination of the law altogether, or some states will still feel, well, we don't care for cannabis, and many are provincial in their thinking, and for whatever reason, some have religious basis for that, and just, you know, you can say just social objections, like many object to drinking alcohol. This is legally protected, and saying, well, you know, we don't like marijuana and cannabis, like we don't like having liquor stores on the corner, you know what I mean? So, but still, there has to be some oversight to all this. And then, so that's, you know, part of the problem, just passing a law on a congressional basis that just legalizes the whole thing and just clears the air. And I think it's been really a holdup here for quite some time. And now the fact that we get it descheduled from schedule one down to three does open up some freedom for some of the companies that had banking issues and so forth with regard to it. Many of the listeners probably know this, but here in the U.S., I mean, the fact that it's schedule one, the Internal Revenue Service, in terms of filing your tax return, if you're in the cannabis business, doesn't accept your business expenses as deductions for your tax return. So how you can run a business where you run all kinds of expenses and you can't write them off, and it's just a nightmare in terms of running the books on running a business that's considered federally illegal. So therefore the IRS says, well, you're running an illegal business, you're not going to deduct any expenses. So going on beyond that, there's another legislation that's been pending for a while, which would make some more progress in this area. Of course, as I say, just federally legalizing it nationally would be the ultimate goal, but there's what is known as the Safe Banking Act. It's been introduced in both houses here and has bipartisan support, but it's not moving forward. And that would create a banking bill, and hopefully that could be attached to this rescheduling somehow. And this would sort of clear the air regarding, you know, the ability of companies to conduct business. Some banks won't even open an account if you're in states that it's not illegal in that individual state, or even if you're illegal in that individual state because of fear of violating federal laws. So credit card issues, banking issues, and so forth have to be cleared up. So there's industry support for all this. So just a lot of runaround here with regard to, you know, politics and getting stuff cleared up, even though society as a whole has moved in that, you know, in that direction. It's like the same thing with crypto. You know, name some young person who hasn't conducted business with crypto or traded crypto or used crypto on their phones. I mean, it's probably the majority of anyone under 30. You know what I mean? The whole society is in that. And if you talk about cannabis to the same group, not to say everybody smokes cannabis or uses it, but all exposed to it and probably agree, whether they got it in college or not, that it's probably part and parcel to society. And so the new generation, as the older guys die off, they're going to accept both the cannabis and the crypto world as it's now has been changing, and I think to the positive. So I know there are many out there that object to it, and big very vocal about it, but I'm 78 years old, and I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. It's progress, and crypto is a great breakthrough for the world and for the economy, and cannabis is around for thousands of years, so we're fighting things that are where the momentum is strongly moving forward. So anyway, that's what a couple areas I did want to touch here. I probably went a little bit longer than our listeners care to, but they have to keep monitoring this, because a breakthrough in either of these legislation areas provides opportunities to make money in the markets, which I guess is part of this broadcast, because obviously the cannabis stocks are going to benefit significantly, and many are very cheap and big potential profit opportunities for those who pay attention. And in the crypto world, there are a lot of the altcoins out there, whether you're a trader of Ethereum or Solana or XRP or any XLM or any of the big names out there, or you're an investor in companies like Coinbase, big public companies that are in that business. There's a big profit potential here if you follow the markets, and there's some positive move with the legislation. So you want to keep your ears and eyes open.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, you tell us we're in an interesting period when it comes to celestial cycles.
Well, more than that, there's some minor geomagnetic storms underway right now from our friend up there called the Sun, and sending CMEs, coronal mass ejections to the Earth. And you wonder sometimes, and I don't have a study on this, and I don't know if maybe if someone out there has done the study. I'm sure the scientists have the data. But, when you see a big sell-off like we saw in the markets today, and you can say, well, crude oil was up and Iran is flaring up and all this kind of stuff. But I think there's a correlation between the CMEs and the solar activity with the actual stock price changes and the effect on the equity and the futures markets here on the Earth. So when you see a high geomagnetic storm, it's in progress today, in fact, it's reported here on the internet, and you see the market sell off, you wonder if there is a correlation, and I'm sure there is. I mean, for years I've been talking about the lunar cycles and how you can see change of directions around the lunar cycles, and you can study this going back thousands of years, but if you just put up a chart and plug in all the lunar cycles in the last period of time you want to plug it in, you'll see, key change of direction points just around those lunar cycles. And then you even going beyond that, as I talked about, you see the seasonal variations, during the winter, spring, summer, and autumn equinoxes and solstices, where markets tend to be affected by the planetary position in the seasons. We don't see the Wall Street Journal or Barron's or CNBC or everybody talk about this, but there's definite correlations and they do have impact. And as I mentioned at the top of the conversation, we just came out of what's known as a Mercury retrograde situation, which is in the last 30 days, happens about every 6 months. And without getting into all the details, I mentioned it in the newsletter and you can look it up, but basically it does have an impact in terms of the financial markets and world markets. And it may have impact on war and all the other things that we have, war news and everything else we have to deal with. So we're not in any isolation here on the Earth by any stretch. And these cycles definitely have, a very important impact to the short-term market.
Now, on the geocosmic front, how much impact do these cycles have on the financial markets?
That's what I'm saying. I believe they have a very strong effect. In fact, we warned in our newsletter, we said we're entering this Mercury retrograde now here in July, and it's going to last through the month. You could see a lot of volatility, and then now we're reading just the last day or two, we're getting geomagnetic storms on the Sun and, so forth. So there's definite impact to it. Doesn't mean you're going to predict markets every day, but it's a warning sign that says, hey, we're entering a period that you got to pay attention to potential trouble, both, I guess, on a geopolitical or economic financial basis. So basically, I've been saying, watch out for July. And it turned out that was part of our forecast model because we had seen that cycle come in and incorporated accordingly. So, it's like anything else. You know, it's a weatherman making a forecast. You know, you can look at all your numbers and all your data, and then you want to, just before you come out with your forecast, you want to look out the window and make sure, you know, what you're predicting is actually unfolding outside in the real sky, because, you know, you could be off in your analysis. So it's what you're doing. You're taking your longer-term forecast numbers, your bigger picture stuff, you know, where you are in the season, where you are in the current monthly cycle, where you are in the lunar cycle, where you are in the seasonals, and then combined with what's actually happening that day in the markets, and you see in terms of price action or in terms of news stories and so forth, and try to put it all together if you're short-term oriented. But they do give you warning. They do tell you that you're entering an important time frame, and I do pay a lot of attention to that.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure. Talk to you next week.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.